All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. I'm sorry for the traffic issues and the parking issues. We'll have to, I don't know, maybe we'll move the shir a little bit, a couple of minutes later. Maybe for now. Okay, we'll figure it out, Emir Tzashem. So, tonight was supposed to be a Tehillim shir, but I might be the only one who's very eager here for Pesach. But I figured, you know what, we have this week and Emir Tzashem, then next week is our official pre-Pesach shir. So whereas next week we're going to focus a little bit more on the Yom Tov of Pesach, I wanted to focus a bit more this evening on the Haggadah, and specifically one area of the Haggadah which I personally find incredibly troubling and really difficult to comprehend. And I think many find difficulty in kind of wrapping their head around what exactly is happening over here. So in general, one of the most intriguing parts of the Haggadah, I shouldn't say one, everybody has, you know, I just came, I spoke to a group of young women just before, and it was interesting. I started off the shiur with them by asking, you know, what's the most meaningful part of the Haggadah to you? And it's always interesting to hear how people answer that question, because of course different parts of the Haggadah speak to us in dramatically different ways. But to me, I think always one of the parts that grabs my attention most is the Arba Banim, the four sons. My wife every year says the same beautiful Dvar Torah, each and every year, about, I think it's Rabbi Sachs, right? Rabbi Sachs who quotes it, that it's not four sons, but rather it's four parts that every person has. Did I get it right? I think so. Okay, good. I had a very, very beautiful idea that there's something about this, and we read four sons, and the truth is we recognize there's no one who's ever always a Chacham, or always a Rasha, or always a Tam, or always a She'eni Yodea Lishol. These are like the personality types. And I think for many of us, as we go through life, we have all those different parts combined inside our personalistic identity. And the truth is, it really depends on the days. Some days I'm more of a Rasha than a Chacham, and some days I'm more of a Chacham than a Tam, and some days I'm just a She'eni Yodea Lishol. I just have no idea what I'm doing in life, and absolutely no idea what's going on. And the truth is, it's very affirming, because the truth is what the Haggadah is telling us, you know, that there's so much in the Pesach Haggadah. I often think the only thing that could be better about the Seder night is if you could start it at 6 p.m. You know, if you could start just like a little bit earlier so that the exhaustion kicks in just a little bit later. I feel that sometimes, because especially there's so much work that goes into Pesach, and by the time Yom Tov comes around, often we're so tired that we don't necessarily get the full appreciation of what is happening on the Leil HaSeder, and the power of the Leil HaSeder, and the energy that is in this night. So I want to focus on tonight the Rasha. The Rasha, because out of the four sons, the Rasha bothers me the most. Now, not because he's a Rasha, but the truth is what bothers me most is kind of how we relate to him. So let's take a look in source number one. Rasha Mahu Omer. What does the Rasha say? Maha Avoda Hazos Lachem. Literally, what is this avodah? What does this work for you? So the Haggadah says, Lochem v'lo lo. See, if you notice in this question, he says, what does this work for you? So by definition, he's talking about, in other words, he's excluding himself from the klal. Ulefi shehotzias aso min haklal. He has removed himself from the collective, because he said, what does this work for you? He's removed himself from the collective. Kafa be'ikar. Therefore, again, he denies the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Very, very strong words. Afata haki yashinav amrlo. So generally, how do we translate this phrase? Afata haki yashinav?
Put his teeth on edge.
Right? Put his teeth. Is that how we translate? Chai, you're too nice. How do we normally translate it? Punch him in the mouth. Punch him in the mouth. Which, by the way, just like, I don't know, I'm not like a guru on parenting or anything like that, but I don't know. It's such a strange thing. It's such a strange thing. I got it. Even if you subscribe to the spoil the rod, or what is it? Sorry, spare the rod, spoil the child ideology. This seems a bit much, right? This seems a bit much. Again, I got it. Maybe he's a little chutzpahdik. Maybe, again, it's maybe even theologically problematic. Maybe he's even an apikores, right? Maybe he's a total agnostic and non-believer. What exactly I'm accomplishing by hitting him in the mouth or hitting him in the teeth, it's not immediately clear. So I hit him in the mouth, the Amar lo, and say to him, Ba'avur zeh, asah Hashem li b'tzeisi mimitzrayim. You know what? You're right. God did this for me when we left Egypt. Li v'lo lo. Me, and I say for me, and not you. You know why? Ilu hayasham lo hayanigal. We say to the Rasha, if you were there, you would not have been redeemed. Now, it's important to understand historically, we know the Pasuk says in Shmos, V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Yisrael, Parshas B'shalach. So v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim. Now Rashi says, what does it mean v'chamushim? So Rashi gives a number of different interpretations. One interpretation says armed. Because remember, again, it's interesting. Klal Yisrael, right? We fight Amalek immediately. Ever wondered to you, like, where did we have weaponry to fight Amalek? Where did that come from? So Rashi is already preempting this question. And Rashi says, when we left Egypt, not only did we take gold and silver and everything else, we took weapons. We took weapons. Second approach in Rashi, chamushim means, listen to this, only 1/5 of the Jewish people left Egypt. 4/5 of the Jewish nation died during the plague of Choshech, during the plague of darkness, which, by the way, is an astounding concept, that 4/5 of the Jewish nation did not want to leave Egypt. 4/5 of the Jewish nation were not ready to go ahead and give up the life that they had in order to embrace some new destiny. HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized that, unfortunately, this 4/5 would ruin it for the remaining 5th that wanted to build the destiny, wanted to build a nation. So 4/5 of Klal Yisrael died during the Makkah of Choshech. So what do we say to the Rasha? You know, Rasha, if you were there, you would have been one of the 4/5. You would not even have been redeemed. Okay, what's problematic about this paragraph? Imagine for a second you're the Rasha. How are you feeling after this exchange? Right? Even worse. You know what? It's interesting. If you've ever been made, let's say you know someone who's made a mistake in life. I'm not suggesting anyone here. You know, if you have a friend who's made a mistake in life, and you know how sometimes, again, when somebody confronts you about your mistake, so there are two ways you could confront a person about a mistake. You could forgive them and be understanding, or you could beat them down about it. So in general, if you've ever received one of those verbal beatdowns, how do you generally feel afterwards? Right? Worse. No one gets a verbal beatdown and feels better about themselves. And this is very important. When you put down a person, the person who's being put down never says, you know what? Thank you so much for putting me down, because now I really feel good about myself and I'm ready to make significant personal change. Generally, when you put people down enough, unfortunately, they begin to believe the put downs, they begin to accept the put downs, and then any hope of change quickly evaporates. So what's interesting to note over here is, I would assume that our goal with the Rasha, what's our goal with him? What's our goal? Kiruv. To rehabilitate him, to bring him closer, a little bit of Kiruv, something. But what are we doing over here? In other words, what is it exactly that is happening over here? Look at the three parts. There's the Rasha's question. What is all of this work for you? Then there's how we interpret that question. Oh, for you, but not for him. He excludes himself from the klal. So what do we say to him? You're right. You're not included. Because had you been in Egypt, you would not have been redeemed. It just begs the question of, like, what are we doing? What are we doing over here in this paragraph? And probably better stated, like, so what? What's the lesson? In other words, what am I supposed to take from this exchange with the Rasha? So Rabbi Lau, the former chief rabbi of Israel, has a beautiful, beautiful Haggadah called Yachel Yisrael. My favorite Haggadah. I don't know that you could purchase it here in America, but I got it a number of years ago in Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Lau writes just beautiful commentaries on the Haggadah. There is like a smaller, like, adapted version that they have, but everything beautiful. So Rabbi Lau asks in number 2. He says, She'ilam aforsemesi. It is a very well-known question. So he asks a different question. He says, Ma be'etzem mavdil bein she'ilas ben hachacham L'she'elaso shel ha-ben ha-rasha. So Rabbi Lau asks a very famous question. His question is, I don't understand. Everybody's jumping on the Rasha because he says, Ma ha-avoda hazos lachem. What is all this work for you? And the focus is on the lachem, for you. In other words, he's not saying, what is this for us? He's saying, what is this for you? So he is excluding himself, extracting himself, removing himself from the collector. But that says, one second, hold up. Go back to number 1 for just a moment. Look on the left-hand side in source number 1. Chacham, mahu omer, ma'edos v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu eschem. Rabbi Lau says, one second. The Chacham pretty much asks the same question, a little bit more verbose. All right, but the Chacham says, what are these edos, chukim, and mishpatim? These are all different types of halachas. What is all of this stuff that Hashem commanded you? So Rabbi Lau says, why is everyone jumping on the Rasha that he's excluding himself from the collective? He's asking, what is this, all this stuff that you're doing? The Chacham effectively asks the same exact question. Yet the Chacham is treated with kavod, the Chacham is treated with derech eretz, and the Chacham is called the Chacham. What's going on over here? Skip the paragraph beis. So Rabbi Lau in this essay actually gives a number of answers to this question, but I want to share with you one, and this is really beautiful. He says, Yeshnu tshuva nosefes l'shelas ahedlo bin ha-chacham va-rasha. Rabbi Lau says, I want to share with you an additional answer. The distinction between the chacham and the rasha. Source number two, paragraph beis. Vihi, eitzel ha-chacham atamotzi shlosha markivim shomaresha sayadus b'she'eluzu. Eidos chukim mishpatim. So what's interesting, Rabbi Lau writes as follows. If you look at the Chacham's question is actually a very thought-provoking question. What is the Chacham asking? We have so many different types of mitzvos, right? We have Eidos, right? Eidos. We have Chukim and we have Mishpatim, right? So Eidos refer to statutes. Chukim refers to things that we don't understand the reason for. And Mishpatim refers to intuitive halachas. Like, Kabbalah Savicha Lassimecha. Even had the Torah not said it, I would have still known it. Right? Chukim, Para, Dumu. We just read Parashas Para this past week. Mishpatim usually refers to like tort law, personal injury law, damages. So the Chacham is asking like, we have all of these different bodies of knowledge, right? All these different buckets of laws. Why? Whereas what does the Rasha say? He says, "Lu'umas ze itzla Rasha yeshna rak mila achos ha'avoda." How would you translate the word avoda?
Service.
Service or work or sorry?
Worship.
Worship. Good. Hold on to that. Good. Excellent. What else? Or toil. Toil. Right, avoda, good, because remember we call avoda like tefillah is avoda shebalev. So yes, avoda is worship, avoda is work. But really, in this, especially again, when you think about it in context of Pesach, right? Remember again, Paro put upon us avodas parech. Avoda represents toil. Rabbi Lau says the Chacham and the Rasha are asking two fundamentally different questions. The Chacham is asking, I don't understand all of these different mitzvos. We have so many different obligations, so many different things, so many different responsibilities. Why? Why? Just explain it to me. I just want to point out, by the way, there's nothing specifically scholarly in the Chacham's question. So what makes the Chacham a Chacham? Intellectual curiosity. Right, he's asking, it's not like the brightest question in the world. What's all this stuff? In Yiddishkeit, what makes a Chacham, you know, what's very important to understand, in Yiddishkeit, what makes a Chacham is not the power of retention. Why? Because the power of retention is not something you do. The power of retention is something that God does for you. That's how your mind works. The same way that you don't get a shkoyach for having a photographic memory. It's not the pshat, you know, I worked very hard and I got a photographic memory. You know, because Baruch Hu gave you that gift, so that's great. You have to utilize it in the right way. So the ability to have the power of analysis, intellectual acumen, that's all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in the eyes of Yiddishkeit, what makes a chacham a chacham? Are you willing to ask? Like, are you curious? You know, isn't it, you know, one of the most beautiful things about children, right, especially little children, is their curiosity, right? How a child could be fixated on the most mundane thing, right? That's not, right? They'll take a pot, right? And they're just looking at the pot. And the adults wondering, like, what are you looking at? Like, it's just a pot. But they're looking at the corners and the handles and the this and the that. And the truth is, it's the most beautiful thing about children. What's the problem as we grow up? Well, there are many problems as we grow up. But one of the problems we have as we grow up is we lose our curiosity. We stop becoming curious. We're no longer curious about ourselves. We're not curious about God. We're not curious about life. We just kind of trudge through. What makes the Chacham is a sense of intellectual curiosity. What is all of this stuff? But back to the Rasha. Rabbi Lau says, when it comes to the Rasha is saying like this. Here's Rasha's question. Why work so hard? Why deal with all of this stuff? Maha avoda. What is this burden? This whole thing called Judaism is so overwhelming. It is so burdensome. The details just seem to be so profoundly cumbersome. He says, etzlo, In Russia's world, he doesn't see that there are different buckets of law, right? There's no intellectual curiosity there. What When the Chacham looks, sorry, when the Rasha looks at Yiddishkeit, he sees one thing, and that is a burden. A burden. And if he could, he would offload that burden in a second. Now, I just want to point out something very interesting about the Rasha. What you notice over here is the Rasha, ultimately, again, the Rasha is, we often think of the Rasha, you know, it's interesting, sometimes like in the illustrated Haggadahs, like how they illustrate the Rasha. But we often have this view of the Rasha is, I don't know, he's not observant, or he's off the derech, or he's this, or he's that. The Rasha is frum. The Rasha's frum. The Rasha is the guy sitting next to you in shul. I mean, not tonight, but I'm saying, but you know, right? The Rasha's here. The Rasha's showing up, right? The Rasha's coming to shul. The Rasha's coming to davening. The Rasha's putting on tefillin. The Rasha's doing mitzvahs. The Rasha's shomer Shabbos. The Rasha's shomer kashrus. The Rasha's doing all the stuff. So why is there a Rasha? Everything is a burden. Everything is a burden. And if I could rid myself of my Jewish guilt, I would offload this burden in a heartbeat. I'll keep doing it because whatever, I don't know, I'm scared of punishment, I'm scared of my parents, I'm scared of God, whatever it might be, but it's an avoda. It is just simply a burden that sits on me day and night. You know, Rabbi Lau says something beautiful. Look at paragraph Gimel. He says, Mashal Amar Akach HaMagid MiDubno. So he quotes over here a mashal, a parable from the Dubno Magid. Shnei Anashim. There are two people. Kol Echad Shalach Mishlach Lefi Yisuko. So each one had to send a package, right? They were both, we're going to see. One of them labored in precious jewels. He was a jeweler. And the other one was labored in raw metal. Raw metal. So I'll call them Reuven and Shimon, right? Reuven was the jeweler and Shimon dealt in raw metal. They each had to send out a package, right, to clients. And what happens? The Dubno Magid says the post office confused the packages and instead sent Reuven's package, the precious jewels, to Shimon's customer, to the raw metal guy. And ultimately, again, the raw metal, right, Shimon's package to Reuven's customer, the precious metal guys. So what happens? So when Reuven's customer picks up the package and he sees that it's so heavy, he doesn't even have to open it up. What does he realize? It's not my package. Clearly, I don't have to open it up. Why? Because something so heavy is not the right package. The Dubno Magid says something beautiful. The Dubno Magid says Yiddishkeit is a package of precious gems. And if when you lift it up, it feels too heavy. It feels too cumbersome. It feels too overwhelming. Then you don't have the right package. Derachah darchei Noam. The ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are beautiful and the ways of Torah are pleasant. Yiddishkeit is supposed to make us feel good about ourselves. It doesn't mean that it's not demanding. And it doesn't mean that there's not work to be done. But if a person feels like it's a burden and a person feels like it's cumbersome, you have the wrong package, then you're not practicing the right version of Yiddishkeit. Then you're not serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the right way. Because Yiddishkeit is that beautiful package of precious gems that when you pick it up, it's easy to pick up, it's beautiful to look at, and it's even more beautiful to wear. So therefore, says Rabbi Lau something amazing. He says, look at paragraph Dalit, then we'll link it back. This is beautiful. He says, L'sima nosa azeh, kidai lasim leiv. This is such a beautiful insight. Paragraph Dalit, source number 2. By the way, there's more on this sheet than what we're going to cover tonight, so you can keep it. You'll keep it for Pesach, for the Seder. But I just want to show you just a couple of incredible ideas. He says like this, She'etzleinu archem misiba gdol lebar mitzvah. So, you know, Rabbi Lau writes, you know, we have the custom to make a big party for a bar mitzvah, a bas mitzvah. So he says, listen to this. This is so incredible. He says, Ba'olam mekubal la'aroch smachot kimishtachre reminatal. This is incredible. The way of the world is, when does the world make parties? The world makes parties when you finish something, right? For example, he says, Kishemesai mishnas limudim, graduation, siyum chok limudim beis ha-sefer, siyum sherut tzva'i, o kisheparsha me'avoda, retirement party, right? Parties, it's interesting, right? Celebrations often mark the end of something. Etzleinu, kishenar ben shloshes rei nichnas la'ol shatorah mitzvos, hu mitzayin zos b'chagiga rabba. It's incredible. So a boy becomes a bar mitzvah. What do? Now you have this new incredible amount of responsibility on your shoulders. And what do we do? We make a party. Why? Ki ha'am ha'yehudi yesh bo hadavar miyuchad hazeh sheknisa l'ol hu l'gabav sipuk atzum. Because we are the people that when we take on responsibility, it is the absolute cause for dramatic celebration. Tochen va'osher b'chayim. Because the responsibility is value added to my life. V'lachin hu chogeg es knisa so l'ol v'lo es hisparkuso min ha'ol shatora mitzos chalila. So therefore, what do? We celebrate our entry into the responsibility of mitzvos and not chas v'shalom, ultimately again, the departure. So such a beautiful idea, such a beautiful insight. We celebrate the assumption of responsibility. What's the problem of the Rasha? The Rasha doesn't feel the responsibility to be a privilege. Instead, he feels the responsibility to be a yoke. He feels it to be avoda. It's cumbersome. So why is this incredibly amazing? Because the truth is, at least I think, it changes your view of the Rasha. Right? Suddenly, all my life, I'm looking at the Rasha as some evil guy. Now, how do you look at the Rasha? How do you look at him? Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's sad that there's someone walking around with such a skewed and negative view of his Yiddishkeit. That instead of looking at his Yiddishkeit as a beautiful package of precious jewels sent down to him from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is so value added to existence, that is so value added to life, all he sees in the entirety of Yiddishkeit is one word, avoda. It's just toil. And again, he's going to do it. He's going to show up. He's going to fulfill his responsibilities. But day in and day out, it just feels so heavy. And it struck a chord. It's really struck a chord with me because I think that all of us, I think sometimes we may struggle with this same yisod as well. And it's not an accident that this is brought up in the context of Pesach. Because sometimes, especially in preparing for Pesach, right, sometimes again a person has that moment where they're like, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't know why this matters. I don't know if this is too much. It's too difficult. It's too cumbersome. It's an avoda. So it's interesting. Like, it's natural and it's normal for a person to have those moments of Russia-like feeling where I just feel so overloaded by the expectations by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the whole thing becomes cumbersome. So if you look at number three, I want to show it to something amazing. So the question is, being that, again, referencing my wife's Devar Torah, that all of us have this rush inside of us also, right? We all have this. We all have moments like this where I wish, again, it's okay to articulate it, like, I wish I didn't have to do this. I wish this wasn't an obligation upon me. I wish it didn't feel like such a dramatic avoda. That's the Rasha. Those are the Rasha moments in life. So the Piyajetzna, in his Sefer B'nei Machshava Tova, so this is an incredible Sefer. We have a Shir on Thursday night. It's a Chassidus Chabura. We actually did this Sefer. This is an incredible Sefer. It's a very, very small Sefer, written by the Piyajetzna. Of Klonim is Kalman Shapir, Hashem Yikom Damo, was killed by the Nazis, Yimach Shem Zichrom, in the Warsaw Ghetto. And before the war, the Piyajetzna was approached by a group of Talmidim. And it's incredible. They asked their Rebbe for, like, a manual of personal growth. Give us just like a guidebook for how we go ahead and grow. But what was interesting is the Piyajetzna told them, you could do this, but the most effective form of growth is when you grow together with a group. Get a chabura, get a group together, and everybody be focused on some form of growth. And he lays out this entire manual. So I want to share with you something amazing. Look at source number three. He says something incredible. He says, Kol tach lisenu. This is such a beautiful and incredible piece. Kol tach lisenu, our entire essence, hu shenis hapech mi ben shifcha leben melech. So this to me, I don't know, I was so like overwhelmingly astounded by this idea. Piyajetzna says, the entire essence of Yiddishkeit is changing yourself from being a son ultimately of a servant to a son of the king. Now what does this mean? Piyajetzna says like this, a lot of times in our service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the master, and I'm the servant. which is incredible and beautiful. What's the problem with a master-servant relationship or a king and subject relationship? What's the problem? What's the problem? What would you say? Piagetna says, there's a distance, right? Remember again, a servant is in the service of the king, but a servant doesn't have unfettered access to the king. There's a distance, right? We saw, right? We just when we go to Sesta, there's a distance. You can't come to the king whenever you want. That's the way that it works. That's different than a father and a son. A parent and a child, the child always has access to the parent. The Piagetna says, part of what we try to accomplish in our Yiddishkeit is to turn ourselves from servant to son. I don't want to be a servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to be a child of Hashem. V'niskarev ba'avodosenu. You look what he writes. Minacha harechayim el heichal amelech v'kisei hakavod. I want to go from the grinding stone into the throne room, right? The servant works by the grinding stone. And again, he's in the service of the king, and he loves the king, and the king appreciates him. But there's a distance. I don't want to work for the king by the grinding stone. I want to get to the king in the throne room. Zosomeres. Shelo bilvat shnavores Hashem rak shenasa ovdi Hashem. Velo bilvat shenif'al bikdusha rak shenasa atzmenu kidoshim. Lachin. So he says, and this is incredible. He says, what's the difference between a servant and a son? When is a servant of the king? Think about this just a moment. It's just fascinating. The way, again, this sefer of Bnei Machshava Tova is not like it's very deep, but it's not like a classical sefer quoting Myron McComo's different sources. This is the Piaget almost speaking from his heart. When is a servant to the king? When he's actively working for the king. But when he's home, I'm my own person, as opposed to a son. When is a child the child of a parent? When? Always. I never stop being a child of my parent. So the Piagetna says, that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to transform ourselves from servants to sons, which does two things. Number one, it eliminates distance. I don't want to worship Hashem at a distance. I want to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number two, I don't just want to be connected to God when I'm serving. I want to be connected to God at all times. To turn myself into a chefz, into an object of Kiddush. Alachein. Yochol kol ish linasos es atzmo bazeh. Listen to what he writes. This is an incredible piece. Piagetna says, so what can you do? He says, listen to this. He says, achar kol avoda yistako bekirbo. After you engage in any form of spiritual service, let's say you daven or Shabbos, whatever it is that you're doing, introspect. Hispalalti lamarati. I davened, I learned. Haim hineni margish bekirbi ezer ruach tara. This is incredible. Do I feel differently? Right? Think about this for just a moment. Daven. And then after you daven, ask yourself a simple question. Do I feel holier? Do I feel holier? Tia filu daka mina daka. Even if there's only like a slight little additional spark of holiness. Hey machshavosai, ritzonai, bagishosai, ata acher avodasi, mishunos me'at miritzoni umachshavti acher dolduli ba'olabach zosav. Do I feel differently? Are my thoughts different? Are my emotions different? Do I just, by the way, what an incredible exercise. We are so used to engaging in mechanistic religious behavior. The Piagetna says, ask yourself, after you do something, whatever the something is, do you feel different? Even just a tiny bit different. He says, Haim ani margish ata ga'aguim lamatzavi akodem, shayisi be'ez tfilasi va'avodasi, he margish ani min ke'ev lev, ashnischarakti min atara v'yofi ha'oyon, shitztasi v'abashas tfilasi. Something amazing. Let's use davening as an example. When you finish davening, do you think to yourself, oh, you know what? I wish I could go back to how I felt when I was davening. That davening was so nice. That davening was so beautiful. That davening was so special. And now that it finished, I like yearn to get back to that a little bit more. Imes kol ze ataro v'sovel simenu shavadas cheretzu yehi lifnei amakom v'gam gufechem iskayu shavadasach. This is incredible. Piagetna says, how do you know if you're a son or you're a servant? If after you daven or after you engage in any form of spiritual service, you feel different. You feel different, even a little difference. And after you finish, you yearn to go back to that thing that you were just doing, that means you're a son. That means you're a child. If you don't feel it, then you're a servant. Interesting litmus test. Interesting litmus test. I'll tell you, when I learned this, I was very depressed by this. Very depressed by this. Because the truth is, 9 out of 10 times after I do something, I don't feel different. And the truth is, I'm not yearning back for it. I'm not hearing a bad for. I'm ready to move on to the next thing. But it is an eye-opening awareness of how we could kind of gauge where we are holding spiritually. Do I feel different after I engage in Avodas Hashem? Right? Do I yearn to get back to that spiritual service that I just finished? If I do, I'm a child. If I don't, then I'm a servant. And by the way, I want to point out, being a servant is not a bad thing. Being a servant is a fantastic first step. The danger just is you can't bottom out there, right? You can't remain a servant. You have to progress to being a child. So the Piaget then says, so what happens? I davened. And after I davened, I do not feel any different. And nor do I feel in my heart a yearning to go back to davening. So okay, so clearly I'm not a child, I'm a servant. So what do I do now? Look at the Piaget that says, Vim lav, ta'isa b'chom adjir hosei achas shalom. So it could be, Piaget says, you're going about it wrong. So what do? Aval gam az al yipoli becha. Hatrufa lo pa'ala. So, okay, so let's pause here for just a second before we get to the punchline. Piaget says something amazing. So the Piaget says that this is the Rasha. The Rasha is the servant. The Rasha, see, isn't it incredible? This guy who in our minds, like I almost feel like we have to ask Mechila from the Rasha. Because all of these years, we've literally looked at him as a Rasha. It turns out he's actually not as bad as we thought he was, because the truth is, a lot of us live in this exact state of Judaic existence for much of our lives. The Rasha is a person who goes through life, he's doing everything he's supposed to do, but it feels like a burden. And after I finish doing whatever it is that I'm supposed to be doing, I don't feel any different. And after that, I don't even have a yearning to go out. I'm happy it's done. I'm happy I finished my obligation. I checked the box. I'm ready to move on. I don't feel any differently, and I don't yearn to go back to it. The Piaget says, okay, you're an Eved. By the way, you're an Eved. What does the Rasha say? Maha'avoda hazos lachem. Why do we all have to be avadim? Why go through life with this cumbersome load? What are we getting out of it? The Piaget says there's a lot of people who operate like avadim. So what do you do in life if you're a Rasha? That sounds a little dramatic, right? But what do you do in life if you feel like an Eved? And what do you do in life when you feel that your Yiddishkeit is maha avoda hazos lachem? No, I'm seeing, don't we often, maybe I'm the only person who ever feels this way, right? But so often, like, there are times in life where I'm just like, it's just a lot. And by the way, I want to point that something else out. Sometimes it's not just about, like, there's so much to do in Judaism. Sometimes it's also about a feeling of just buckling under the load of being Jewish. Haven't there been moments since October 7th, that a person feels, you know what? Like, I feel like I can't handle this burden anymore. Again, to be clear, not that I'm shopping around for other, right? But like, it's heavy. It's really heavy. And it's inescapable, right? We like to bury our head in the sand, right? Until there's a rally outside of Shomrei Emunah, you know? So again, you could ignore it until you can't ignore it. And it feels like every single day, there's something else. Sometimes the maha avoda hazos lachem is not about, I can't deal with the mechanistic details of Yiddishkeit. It's that sometimes the responsibility of being a Jew feels so overwhelmingly heavy, right? You read the news, right? And you see again that, you know, I'm sure if everyone's following the news, and you see again how, you know, there are countries that are ready to recognize unilaterally Palestinian state before July. Mamish rewarding terrorism. And then again, you see a news story today, like the IDF accidentally bombed a caravan of people delivering supplies. Like, our holy soldiers are trying to go ahead and wage a war in the most ridiculous circumstances that any other army would just carpet bomb and not worry about anyone. Collateral damage is collateral damage. And everything is so precision. And everything with you. And like, okay, unfortunately, tragedies. And like, it's again, it's like, It's every opportunity to pounce on us and every opportunity to blast us. And sometimes you just say, you know what? Not that I'm ready to give it up. Nothing could ever separate me from my Yiddishkeit. But there are some times that I just feel like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely overwhelming. So what do you do? What? And that's the Russia, by the way. That's the Russia is not evil. That's what I'm saying. The Russia isn't shul. The Russia is part of the minion, right? The Russia is doing chesed. The Russia is doing all this other stuff. The Russia is just the person who says, come on guys, I'm just saying what all of you are thinking, which is ma avoda zos lachem. What is this? So the Piagetna says something amazing. What do you do if you feel your Yiddishkeit is cumbersome and burdensome? What do you do if when you finish your religious rites and rituals, you feel no different, you're the same person, and to be honest, I'm happy it's done. I checked the box. What do you do in those moments? Look what the Piaget says. End of source number three. Piaget writes, he says, V'im Rav Tuisa, he says, G'aval gam az al yipoli becha, ha'trufa lo pala, shenas es masnecha, ve'hischazik b'avodasecha, b'yeser se'es v'yeser oz. So the Piaget says something that sounds at first a little bit counterintuitive. He says, try harder. Try harder. Do you know what the secret of inspiration in Yiddishkeit is? It sounds totally counterintuitive. Work harder and do more. But I'm so uninspired by what it is that I'm doing. Okay, I got it. Noted. Do more. Work harder. Keep at it. And one day if you keep at it, and one day if you keep harder, the inspiration will come. So the Piaget then says, right now you feel ma'avoda zos lachem. All you feel is just literally, again, burdened. And all you feel at the end of the day is just overwhelmed. And you're wondering, again, I feel like I'm going to buckle under the load. What do I need this for? Piaget, first of all, he's so, the reason why we love the Piaget now and why his Torah is so beautiful and so sweet is because he is so affirming of the human condition. And so affirming of the fact that, yes, there are times in life that I feel this way. So what do you do in times of life like you feel this way? Bend your shoulder and do more. Bend your shoulder and work harder. You know, it's interesting. People, everybody wants inspiration. And people think like, I'm looking for, so where am I going to get inspiration from? So, you know, especially today where we want everything and we want it now, you know, I'm looking for inspiration from a YouTube short, right? Or I'm looking for inspiration from like a quick 90-second video or a short thing or this, that. Those could definitely provide sparks, and they're very beautiful and very important. But do you know where inspiration really comes from? It comes from ongoing, arduous work. When you keep at your Yiddishkeit and you keep doing it day in and day out, even though, again, day in and day out, it doesn't feel like anything. And day in and day out, it may be totally uninspirational. And day in and day out, it may even feel cumbersome. Keep at it. Keep at it. Keep doing. Keep going. And then one day something amazing happens, which is suddenly you're inspired. See, the interesting part about the Rasha is his question is not really wrong. When he says Maha Avoda Zos Lachem, he's really speaking out something that all of us feel at different points in time, which is sometimes Yiddishkeit feels very heavy. But the answer, says the Piagetna, to that is keep on shouldering it. Keep on doing it. Keep on working. Keep on pushing. Keep on growing. And the inspiration ultimately will come. You know, it's interesting. We often look for inspiration outside of the arduous work of Yiddishkeit, right? I'm looking for something to inspire me. The secret of inspiration in Yiddishkeit, although it's not as I'm sharing it with you, the secret of inspiration in Yiddishkeit is it doesn't come from something external to the avoda. It comes from the avoda itself. The harder you work, and the more you're willing to do, the sooner you will be inspired. The more you are willing to put in that effort, says the Piagetna, the day will come where you will transform from servant to son. And again, I think what's interesting, if you kind of just pull this all together just because of time, there's another piece in this, but I'll leave it for a different time. So if we come full circle, right? So now, by the way, I think we have just much greater appreciation of the Rasha. So suddenly again, he's a guy who's doing everything mechanistically that he's obligated to do, but he just feels like this whole thing is a tremendous burden. So in the words of the Piagetna, he feels like a servant and doesn't feel like a son. So ultimately, against what's our response to him? Hakei Eshinov. Now, what does haki ashina mean? So we translated before. So literally, again, haki ashina means hit him in the mouth. Although here's the interesting part about this. If that was really what it meant, it would have been haki with a chaf, not a kuf. Not a kuf. So kaha, that lashon, can mean a couple of different things. If you take a look at number 5, he says, haki ashinov. He says, perush, takni tenu b'dvarim, at sheshinov yunasa chaos. Chaos literally means, chaos is like, what's the good English word for it? Like something that's kaha means sour. So you know when you eat something sour, what do you call the face that you make when you eat something sour? Pucker? Pucker up, okay, good. Is that, yeah? Okay, whatever. Sour face, but you understand, like it's almost like you withdraw, like you eat something and like you kind of like withdraw a little bit. The Dvar Aron, one of the Perushim on Haggadah says something. By the way, Dvar Aron was a Hungarian Rav who wrote, we'll have to leave him for a different time because we're running out of time. But he says like this. He says, Haki Eshinov means, Haki Eshinov is, you know, sometimes you have to tell something difficult to someone. And the truth is, they're not going to like to hear it. And when they hear it, they're almost going to recoil. That's what Haki Eshinov means. You have to say it straight to the Rasha. You have to say it straight to the Rasha. In other words, Hakishi doesn't mean hit him in the mouth. You know, Rabbi Nachman has a number of pieces about this where he interprets that Chas V'Shalom, anyone should think that they should hit their children in the mouth. Or for that matter, they should hit their children. So this is Rabbi Nachman, right? So this is not like contemporary. Rabbi Nachman is saying, a parent accomplishes so much more with loving and kind, sometimes stern words, than you could ever accomplish with the hand. With the hand. Haki Ashinov means that sometimes in life, you have to just tell people like it is. And you can't worry about their reaction. And you can't worry about hurting their feelings, because sometimes it's more important to tell a person what they need to hear, and however they're going to take it, they're going to take it. So watch. So the Dvar says like this. Go back to number 1. What do we do to the Rasha? We say to the Rasha. Afata haki ashinov. The MLO. We say to the Rasha. Rasha, you need to make a dramatic decision. Who do you want to be in life? If you just want to be an Eved, you want to be one of those people who walks around and everything in Yiddishkeit is cumbersome, the truth is, then you are 4/5 Jew. And if you are 4/5 Jew, those Jews never left Egypt. Those Jews died in Egypt because they can never embrace the destiny of what it means to be a Jew. Or Russia. So if that's who you want to be, then fine. Right? Hakishin, if tell them straight. If that's who you want to be, then understand, you would never have gotten out of Egypt to begin with. But, see, the unwritten part of the section over here is, what's the unwritten part? The unwritten part is, but it doesn't have to be this way. You could transform yourself. And how do you transform yourself? By like the Piagetzna says, keep working at it. Keep doing. Keep growing. Sometimes the pathway to inspiration is paved with long and arduous uninspired avoda. I know it doesn't sound very appealing, but inspiration, unlike what contemporary culture tells us, that inspiration kind of could just pop into you, that's not the way it works in Yiddishkeit. Inspiration is the culmination of long, arduous, and often uninspired work. And that's the dialogue with the Rasha. If you want to persist like this, if this is who you want to be, then understand you're a 4/5 Jew. And sometimes in life, it's important to say things, even to your kids, that are stuck and that maybe is going to leave them with that sour type face. Like, what did you just say? But sometimes you have to be truthful and forthcoming with a person in order to enable them to self-actualize and to affect the change they're capable of doing. And all of this occurs when? On the night of the Seder. Because what's the whole avodah of Pesach? The whole avodah Pesach is to leave slavery. Chayiv Adam liros es atzmo ki'ilu hu yatzem im Mitzrayim. On the night of the Seder, we don't simply celebrate historical emancipation, but rather we view ourselves as if we are leaving our own servitude as well. There are many forms of servitude. We'll talk about that more next week. But in the Rasha's case, the servitude that we're talking about is, what's your relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What's your relationship to Yiddishkeit? What's your relationship to Torah? If it's all just about avoda, a cumbersome load, then Russia, tonight is the night you have to make a decision. Do you want to go through life always feeling burdened by the responsibilities that you have upon you? Or do you want to recognize that, like the Dubna Magid said, that ultimately, again, your Yiddishkeit is that package of beautiful jewels. And if it feels too heavy or it feels like a burden, it's probably just because you're doing something wrong in it. But if you're willing to work hard, if you're willing to push yourself, if you're willing to keep going, to keep doing, then you will find a beautifully inspired Yiddishkeit. That's the message we give to our kids. That's the message we give to our family. And that's the message we give to ourselves. If you want to be an inspired Jew, if you want to go ahead and transform yourself from an Eved, from a servant to a son, it requires effort, it requires work, it requires toil, sometimes much of it totally, fully, and wholly uninspired. But if you're willing to commit yourself to the process, the inspiration is there to be found. So we'll stop there for tonight. Again, just a little appreciation. I felt I owed this to the Russia. I felt I owed to the Russia. I don't know why. Maybe because I see myself in the Russia very, very much. But I think it's important, especially in these days where Klal Yisrael needs many zechusim, the ability to redeem the Russia a little bit in our eyes, and the ability to bring to your Seder a little bit of a more positive view of the Russia, Mirat Hashem, should be a zechus for all of Klal Yisrael. All right. Next week is our official pre-Pesach Shir, Mirat Hashem.